The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Technology, then worked for Eastern Plumbing and received his journeyman status in 1983. Lawrence worked with his brother in their joint company, United Plumbing, before he formed his current company. Lawrence focused his future of his company, has encouraged his grandsons who are enrolled in the plumbing program in Nova Scotia Community College. Mr. Speaker, I would applaud and congratulate Lawrence Willis on his notable achievements in business and for preparing and encouraging family members to continue his company. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I want to thank all members for those thoughtful member statements as we get ready for oral questions put by members to ministers on this Tuesday, October 25th, just a few days before Halloween. We'll move on. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. We have been bringing many examples to this House of Nova Scotians who are suffering from mental illness and not getting the help that they need. The situation keeps getting worse. This summer, a letter went out from the Mental Health and Addiction Services Department in Amherst to people who are on their waiting list. And the letter says, and I quote, "You were referred for individual therapy some time ago. Our waiting list is quite extensive. We are contacting you at this time to determine whether you wish to remain on the waiting list." My question to the Premier is this: why is his government trying to get people to quit the waiting list for mental health and addiction services instead of ensuring they get the help that they need?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In no way are we trying to get any Nova Scotian who requires support and services to quit any waiting list, Mr. Speaker. But the Honourable Member raises an issue of concern that I can assure him that we'll look into.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in fact, the government is writing to people on the waiting list and asking them to get off the waiting list. Maybe the Premier is not aware of that letter, but I'm sure the public relations people that he hires are, because no doubt we're going to see a press release sometime in the near future with a government patting itself on the back for shorting the waiting list, Mr. Speaker. But this is no way to do it. That letter goes on to say, "You were referred for individual therapy some time ago. Our waiting list is quite extensive. It is our hope in sending this letter that we'll be able to close a number of referrals, since many people have likely improved by waiting." Well, Mr. Speaker, you'd never send a letter like that to someone who's waiting for hip surgery or for cancer surgery, Mr. Speaker. Would the Premier condone sending letters like that to people who are waiting for a physical surgery like hip or cancer, hoping that they've improved by waiting?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the gentleman for the question. There's no question, Mr. Speaker, that investments are required in mental health supports across this province. We've listened to clinicians to make those investments. But I agree with the Honourable Member that letter, if indeed that letter was sent out, it should not have been sent out. I told him in my first answer that I would look and get to the bottom of this, and Mr. Speaker and I will report back to him.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that answer. I think it's important that the Premier look into this, Mr. Speaker, because, in fact, many, many Nova Scotians in Cumberland County, for sure, did get that letter, and I've tabled it here for this House. And, Mr. Speaker, I want to be clear. These are people suffering from mental illness, as sure a disease as any other physical illness, Mr. Speaker. They are on a waiting list because a doctor placed them there, and they need help. And to ask them to bump off the list if they're still waiting, Mr. Speaker, is not acceptable. This is happening in Cumberland County, but I would like to ask the Premier if he'll also determine whether other letters have gone out of a similar nature in other parts of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I told the Honourable Member, I will take the question he has, the information he's provided, and we'll look into it and we'll report back, Mr. Speaker, and let Nova Scotians know. But I want the Honourable Member to know from the very time, given the privilege to be the Premier of this province, we have made mental health health an issue. Minister of Health has invested in more mental health clinicians, listened to clinicians across this province to ensure we provide services, working with our education system and Schools Plus to enhance mental health programs in our school system, Mr. Speaker. The issue of mental health is treated by this government like every other health issue, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to do so. But I do not want to dismiss the issue that the member has brought to this floor. I told him at the beginning of his first question that I will look into this issue.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is also to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier posted a video online. He said he wanted to talk about education. What he really wanted to talk about was to parents and fuel their fears about a possible teacher strike. One parent called the video, and I quote, a piece of propaganda aimed at creating divisions between parents and teachers, end of quote, and I'll table those documents. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier explain why he's trying to divide and conquer rather than listening to teachers' real concern?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. We have negotiated two different agreements, two different executives of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union. Mr. Speaker, as recently as Monday, I was in a school in my constituency, continue to talk to teachers. I know every member of this party has talked to teachers, but it was important, Mr. Speaker, that I had a chance to speak to Nova Scotians to make sure they had the full facts of what was out there. We continue to lay those out in a positive, thoughtful way. Mr. Speaker, we look forward to the opportunity to continue to work with classroom teachers to make sure that they continue to improve the learning environment in the classroom across this province and that they get an opportunity to continue to stay in front of our kids where I know they want to be.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, the video posted online yesterday was paid for by the government of Nova Scotia. When the government threatened to make changes to the senior pharmacare, the people of Nova Scotia were on the hook for the cost of mailing out thousands of apology letters. Mr. Speaker, why does the Premier think it's appropriate to continue to use taxpayers' dollars to clean up his messes?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier of Nova Scotia has an obligation to speak to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, the experts on education in this province are the teachers, students, and the parents. Many teachers have written about the concerns, the frustrations about power school and crowded classrooms. Parents are worried about their children falling through the cracks, and all members of this House have received a letter signed by more than 300 students saying they do not support this government's treatment of teachers, and I'll table those documents. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier agree to stop the spin cycle and start listening to people who know education the best?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. That's exactly what we've done, Mr. Speaker. We worked with the Nova Scotia Teachers Union who told us they wanted smaller class sizes, so we capped class sizes, Mr. Speaker. We worked with the Nova Scotia Teachers Union who said there were too many outcomes from P to 6. We worked with teachers from across this province. We brought them in. We reduced those. Mr. Speaker, we realized we needed more math mentors. We hired more math mentors. Mr. Speaker, we even went and reversed the mistake of this previous government, the Democratic government, would cut reading and recovery, Mr. Speaker. It's positive. It's in the classrooms, Mr. Speaker. I hear the Conservative members standing up on the opposite side, Mr. Speaker. They're going to have to be counted at some point, Mr. Speaker. Are they going to stand with teachers and classrooms? Are they going to defend the actions of the previous government that cut $65 million out of the classrooms, Mr. Speaker? We're going to continue to invest in education, Mr. Speaker. Invest in teachers. Invest in classrooms.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to return to this mental health letter that went out. I was perfectly prepared to accept that the Premier was going to look into it, but of course he couldn't help himself, and he had to try to tell Nova Scotians that they were serious about helping people with mental illness at the same time that he's spelling out those usual talking points, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that thousands of Nova Scotians are getting letters that are going to bump them off the waiting list, Mr. Speaker. So I am going to return to that letter because the letter was very clear, Mr. Speaker. It says you're dropped off the waiting list unless we hear from you otherwise. And then it suggests please be aware of our coping skills workshop that runs three times a year. Mr. Speaker, does the Premier really think it's okay to bump people who are suffering from mental illness off the mental health and addictions wait list and refer them to a coping workshop that happens exactly three times a year?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I gave him an answer. I said I'll look into the situation for him, Mr. Speaker, report back. I don't know what it is, Mr. Speaker. He can't handle it when I give him an answer. He says I don't give him an answer. Fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, I said to him at the very beginning, this is unacceptable. I'll look at it. We'll go forward. But we have made investments, Mr. Speaker, in mental health across Nova Scotians. We've listened to clinicians to make sure we put community-based mental health services in communities across the province. We've listened to teachers, Mr. Speaker. We put mental health clinicians, Schools Plus program, we've enhanced it. But, Mr. Speaker, this is unacceptable, and I told the honourable member when he asked me his first questions, he can stand up in this House for the rest of the question period if he prefers, and I will give him the same answer. When I look into this, Mr. Speaker, I'll be happy to report back to you.
The honourable leader of the official opposition.
Mr. Speaker, it is not an answer to tell people in Nova Scotia suffering from mental illness that all is fine, that his government is doing a great job, when in reality they are sending letters out to people on the wait list for help that are going to get bumped from the wait list. This is exactly what's wrong with this Premier and this government. They spin out these lines to try and tell people everything's okay when they know perfectly well there's a mental health crisis and they're getting nothing but spin and the cold shoulder from this government, Mr. Speaker. So, yes, I'm glad he's going to look into that letter. Will he stand in this House and tell every member, and more importantly, the people of Nova Scotia, that when he's confirmed what we know to be true, that it did go out, that he will ensure it never happens again?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I've told him, this is my fifth time now telling him that I will look into the situation, Mr. Speaker. I said this is unacceptable, but I do want to remind all members of this House the investments that we've made in mental health, listening to clinicians across this province, Mr. Speaker, the enhancement of School Plus programs. But this letter is unacceptable, Mr. Speaker, and I'll look into it, and I said I would get back to him to find an answer out for it.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Today, 9,000 members of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union are set to hold a strike vote. This government's track record with contract negotiations have been marked with protest and heavy-handed legislation. In 2014, this government recalled this legislature in order to pass the law preventing a strike by home care workers. In 2015, we witnessed university professors mobilize against Bill 100, a terrible piece of legislation that would see collective agreements suspended and strikes banned for up to 18 months. So I'd like to ask the minister, will the minister admit that the government's approach to labour negotiations has failed?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. And as the Member well knows, the Minister of Labour does not comment on ongoing labour negotiations, but I won't be doing what that member did, which is negotiate a contract in a parking lot.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
I would like to remind the House, Mr. Speaker, that this government has not signed a single contract with any public service union in this province, Mr. Speaker. That's their track record. I guess that's the accomplishment of the minister and her government. This is not negotiating in good faith. Even children, Mr. Speaker, who are students, the Premier and MLAs received a letter from over 300 of them expressing their concerns and supporting their educators. They rightfully echo teachers that have been saying that teachers' working conditions are students' learning conditions. Neither of these will improve if the government refuses to come to the bargaining table and truly negotiate. So I'd like to ask the minister, if the Premier has set the financial package or said the financial package is non-negotiable and arbitration is off the table, will the minister tell this House whether the government intends to legislate a contract for our Nova Scotia teachers?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as the member well knows, the Minister of Labour does not comment on ongoing labour negotiations.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, page 21 of the Ombudsman's report about Richmond County revealed that the municipality reimbursed some councillors for the cost of participating in a partisan political event. And I can table that report, Mr. Speaker. Two councillors claimed the $50 ticket to a recognition dinner for provincial politicians. In both cases, kilometres to and from the event were claimed as well. Mr. Speaker, has the minister canvassed his colleagues to find out if any of them were the beneficiary of this irregular spending by the municipality of Richmond?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, the situation in Richmond has been cause for concern. All parties actually did receive some sort of funding or expense related to activities with various members, including the member's own party. Of course, all of us would expect that guidelines be followed and that the rules of elections Nova Scotia be followed. Only individuals can donate to parties, Mr. Speaker. So if it was the case that those individuals did not donate themselves, they would have been breaking the laws of the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe that we all know in this chamber that reimbursing someone for a political contribution appears to be a clear violation of Section 236 of the Elections Act. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister confirm whether or not he or anyone in the government caucus has been contacted by Elections Nova Scotia investigators about this possibly illegal political fundraising?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There were members in that party's own caucus who were implicated in terms of expenses. Obviously, every member in this House, whenever we receive any donations from our community members, would expect that those donations follow the rules of the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the minister for his comments. I do hope that he'll be able to table his statements that he just indicated that we received something with regards to that. But page 16 of the Ombudsman's report says that the Department of Municipal Affairs stepped in to stop Richmond councillors from receiving a payment of $100 per day for travel in addition to their meals. The minister's own department flagged the inappropriate spending prior to the Ombudsman's report even being released. And the public has since learned that Richmond taxpayers have paid for alcohol, valet parking, political fundraisers, and spousal travel. Mr. Speaker, did the minister not know about these illegal perks, or did he just simply ignore them?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, I would share the same concerns of that member or any members of this House when we hear of such abuses of expense. There is an ongoing RCMP investigation. We are going to wait until all the details of this case come out, and then we'll be acting appropriately. But what I do not want to do, Mr. Speaker, is paint all municipalities with the same brush. There were a specific set of circumstances here that are currently being investigated and addressed, and if there's further action needed in our department, of course, we are there to proceed.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I agree. I don't believe all municipalities should be painted with the same brush, but we need to clear up this scandal. And the minister knew there was a problem in Richmond. The Ombudsman's report says that the department stepped in once to stop the $100 per day travel bonuses. And just last year, a Grant Thornton audit examined travel expenses and corporate credit card usage by municipal staff and councillors. The audit contained 20 findings and related recommendations. Mr. Speaker, we know that last week the Premier put the hammer down on nursing homes with auditors. Why won't the Minister of Municipal Affairs dole out the same treatment to Richmond councillors and staff for the sake of the taxpayers of Richmond County?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the audit that the member is referring to came about because of a recommendation from our staff and our department. There was red flags in the audit that all municipalities have to provide to us every year. We sent a recommendation back to Richmond that they should undergo, because of these red flags, a forensic audit, which they did. The Ombuds Office took it upon themselves to conduct an investigation, and that has warranted an investigation through the RCMP. Obviously, there are serious concerns here, and we do need to wait for these investigations to conclude so we can act appropriately. But, Mr. Speaker, to suggest that the localized decision-making of these independent councils and independent councillors has anything to do with advice they're getting from municipal affairs is completely outrageous and false, and should not, I don't think that member should be continuing with that level of rhetoric in this chamber.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Education likes to talk about class caps as one of the major improvements they've made to the education system. However, she neglects to mention that the NDP put class caps on primary to grades 3, and this government has seen 85 classes across the province now exceed the set limits. For instance, in 2015 school year, there were 72 classrooms over the cap. The letter received by all members of this legislature from high school and junior high students references classrooms with over 40 or more students. So my question for the Minister of Education today is this. If class caps are what this government touts as one of their major accomplishments, why is class size still one of the primary concerns of teachers?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pleased to hear the member acknowledge that class caps have made a difference in this province. Yeah. And would remind all members of the House that in order to implement a class cap, you have to begin gradually. We have done that up to the end of grade 6. We will be capping some math classes at high school next year in September. And we recognize that the funding that goes to school boards for junior, senior high school is a ratio of 1 to 24. So we certainly are respecting and asking that boards implement and hire their teachers based on a 1 to 24 ratio.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yes, I do say that class caps are very important. What I'm saying is that they're not, unfortunately, being used right now, and that they're soft caps with many extra students in the classrooms. Mr. Speaker, teachers across the province have been loud and clear about their concerns. They say soft caps, data collection, split classes, and in particular systems like PowerSchool and TyNet have exhausted their personal resources at the expense of time with students. They're struggling to support students on individualized program plans who are unable to meet grade-level outcomes. Just last week, the teachers' union accepted the Education Minister's office to proceed with a committee to address workplace concerns. So my question for the minister is, given the government's track record on the class sizes, what assurances can the minister actually give that the government will act on the concerns of teachers, that the concerns that they bring to this committee?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you. The assurance that I can give the House and all members of the public, in particular our parents and our teachers, is that the implementation of the class cap from primary to grade 6 has been extremely successful. We have 96.5 of our classes that are within the cap. That's huge. That's something of which we can be very proud, and I'm going to stand on that record. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Information provided by the Nova Scotia Health Authority indicates that in the Dartmouth catchment area, there are currently 14 vacant family physician positions and another 7 about to become vacant. This total represents 25% of all the doctors serving the Dartmouth catchment. Already, this is impacting residents who have been left without a doctor or who can't find one. So can you explain what is being done to recruit family doctors to the Dartmouth catchment area and fill those vacancies?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, member, for the question. And I want to let the member opposite know that, in fact, Dr. Lynn Harrigan has been personally to visit some of the sites to help with their recruitment and their planning for the next year. We have hired 42 new doctors since July the 1st. and some of those are certainly placed in the metro area.
The honourable member for Dartmouth East.
Mr. Speaker, the health authority says that each one of these physicians sees an average of 1,500 patients, and that they estimate the 21 vacant positions means 30,000 people in the Dartmouth catchment area are currently or soon to be without a doctor. And solving it would require recruiting 50% of next year's graduating class of residents just to Dartmouth, something which is seen unlikely as many locations are competing for doctors. The 2 to 3 nurse practitioners allocated to Dartmouth in the recent announcement obviously can't handle 30,000 people. So, Mr. Speaker, what is the minister's plan to address the physician vacancies in Dartmouth, which is an issue now with already many vacancies?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And in terms of addressing provincially, recruitment from the classes of 2017 residents across the country. We already have a number of contracts signed that will start in June or July of 2017. So there's a very, very strong and robust recruitment plan, and to have some already signed, I think speaks very promisingly for next year.
The honourable member for Inverness.
Speaker, a question for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. People in Richmond County had to go as far as the provincial ombudsman to get action on an issue of inappropriate spending practices by their municipal government. Mr. Speaker, no one was helping them, certainly not this government. In fact, the minister in his last answer said that the ombudsman took it upon themselves in that office to investigate the matter. My question is, where was the minister, and why hasn't this government and this minister's office taking this matter seriously?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, this issue has been taken very seriously by the department. In fact, it was our suggestion that this council conduct a forensic audit, which they did. It was our suggestion that they enhance their expenses. But then it became clear, Mr. Speaker, that there's actually rules in place that were being broken in the local level. So, it is the responsibility of council to conduct their business on behalf of their citizens. They are held accountable to their citizens through a vote, and that has recently happened. We are looking at the laws of the province, looking at expenses in particular, if adjustments need to be made to ensure that the municipalities are held to the high standard that all of us here are in the legislature when it comes to expenses and accounting. We will make sure that that happens.
The honourable member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, another comment the minister made in his answer to my colleague was that she was speaking rhetoric, and that she was talking about independent councillors. But the fact of the matter is, one of the councillors in question was actually also an employee of the Liberal caucus office. Now, was the minister in this Liberal government in a conflict of interest, given they had employed, until recently, in their own caucus office, one of the councillors responsible for the inappropriate spending? Perhaps there was an interest on the part of this government to protect that employee and manage possible damage to the Liberal brand.
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I do not think that is a fair statement at all for that member, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, we hold ourselves here, all of us in this chamber, to a very high standard when it comes to accountability to our constituents. All of our expenses are put online. Our expectation as government and my expectation as minister that same high standard is being applied across the board in our municipalities, Mr. Speaker. If there's more work that needs to be done on this particular case, we're going to look at it, but we are going to wait until the investigations are complete so we have all the details. And if there's adjustments that need to be made to the Municipal Government Act, which oversees the rules and regulations of our municipal units, Mr. Speaker, we will make those adjustments as well.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now, last week, I think I tried twice to ask this question revolving around the issue of at-home cancer medications, but of course, the time conspired against me. As the Minister is aware, many cancers are diagnosed and they begin with treatment that actually can be taken at home without the chemotherapies that, of course, people have to go and receive intravenously. This can relieve the added burden and stress that many Nova Scotians face after receiving a diagnosis of this kind. As the member does represent a rural area, he knows of many of his constituents that have to travel to either the city or far away in order to receive those treatments. So will the minister commit to funding oral at-home medications for cancer patients so we can keep people out of the hospital.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that important question. So that we can start to improve where we are. We currently fund oral cancer drugs to $10 million. That right now we have 87% of Nova Scotians who are covered by one of the provincial programs in having their oral medication funded.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. Now, I know the Minister has referenced that it would cost up to $40 million to cover such an issue. Yet he's never really presented, Mr. Speaker, a background of what that expenditure is. The cost of one staying in hospital for their care is, of course, significantly more, and options would allow patients to have more comfort, to save their loved ones from a great deal of unnecessary travel. So my question or my ask of the minister is simply this. Will the minister commit to actually reviewing this expense and present his analysis to the House of Assembly?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can commit to the member is that we're currently working with a company, STI, to look at how, in fact, we can improve the cost of the oral cancer drugs so that we can also have an expedited process for them to be able to move from the diagnosis to treatment and have oral cancer drugs delivered to local pharmacies in a much more expedited way than currently takes place.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister of Environment. The Citizens Climate Lobby of Halifax recently spoke out in the media criticizing this government's lack of action on climate change adaptation. The group leader claimed that this government has axed the Climate Change Division in the Environment Department, and I will table that. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the Minister if she can confirm whether or not the Climate Change Division has been eliminated in her department.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable Member for that wonderful question, because this is a success story for Nova Scotia. We are actually leading all provinces in GHG reductions. I think that's an amazing job. I will also take note that this is not the result of just this government's action, but other governments in other years as well. Nova Scotia is a success story. This government has four departments that are working very actively on the climate change file. They will continue working. We will certainly be on top of this. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you for that answer, but I wanted to know if the division was actually axed. So maybe the minister will answer that in the second question. Mr. Speaker, as we know, events in Southwest Nova and Cape Breton demonstrate the need to adapt as best we can in preparation for more extreme weather. Yet there are concerns that the work of the Climate Change Adaptation Fund program has stopped. This program was launched in 2010 to support communities in identifying and assessing the threats and opportunities related to climate change. So I'll ask the minister, what work has been done through this program in the last 2 years, and will she table that work in the House and also answer whether the division was axed?
Thank you, Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can tell the member opposite that climate change continues to be a major effort and a major consideration of this government. We can't deny what's happening with the flooding, with the drought, all these different issues that are going on. My department's been working very hard on this, as we've also been talking to stakeholder groups like the Ecology Action Centre and other groups. And we're going to be also, I've had conversations about coastal mitigation as well. So we will continue this conversation and we'll be continuing the work, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, a question for the Minister of Justice. Children's entertainer was recently granted bail as he awaits trial for sex offences against a young girl. The provincial court put conditions on his bail, including no contact with his alleged victim or anyone under the age of 18. Mr. Speaker, this is a charge that is a crime against a child. He will have his rights to a fair trial, but what about the rights of all the children who deserve protection? Remember Fenwick McIntosh? He couldn't stop himself. The point is, Mr. Speaker, we need ankle bracelets to monitor every movement of people charged with sexual offences against children. Does the minister believe children in Nova Scotia deserve that level of protection?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member opposite, and he certainly raises a very important question of safety in our communities. As the member would know, we are the first province in the country that began using ankle bracelets for community monitoring with our community parole offices, and that was done under the previous Conservative government, so we certainly have them in use. And we do use them in particular situations. So I would say it's used in a case-by-case situation, and this is something that I could look at, as the member has suggested.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Minister for offering to look into it. Mr. Speaker, people who commit sexual offences against children need help. And until they get that help, they need help to keep from doing it again. In September 2012, we all remember the story of David James LeBlanc, who was wanted in connection with sex crimes against a teenage boy who was tied up in a remote cabin. At the time, the Liberal justice critic said more restrictive conditions should have been placed on LeBlanc when he was released back in 2010, because, Mr. Speaker, back in 2010, he was awaiting a hearing on other charges of sexual assault and possession of child pornography. And I will offer the quote, and I will table that. At the time, the Liberal justice critic said, if it is decided that the individual should be released because of the nature of the crimes that they've been charged with, an ankle bracelet should be an option. Why the change of heart? Does this government no longer believe children in Nova Scotia deserve this protection?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I hope the member opposite isn't suggesting that we no longer believe in that. Is that part of the quote, or...? We certainly have not said that we don't believe in that. Good. Yeah. Because absolutely the protection of children is paramount, and the protection of anybody who's sexually assaulted is paramount to all of us. And so, therefore, we certainly would look at other avenues to do that. We have to remember, though, too, that sometimes the government doesn't make that decision, or the Department of Justice. People have to be convicted, and they have to be serving a sentence in the community to be monitored. So there may be other avenues to express our interest in that, but I will also tell the member opposite that we don't give direction to the courts, that there's a great division and independence in our whole justice system with prosecutors, with courts, and with our judges, but we can certainly work together on common interests.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week, Nova Scotians learned that a Halifax doctor had his license suspended for a month after he failed to properly post a sign warning women patients that he can't treat them without supervision. The doctor was first disciplined last year by the College of Physicians and Surgeons after admitting professional misconduct during a PAP examination. He also served a brief suspension when he returned to work, but had failed to post the warning sign. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Health believe that a four-week suspension is sufficient in this case?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for the question opposite. And really, it's one that the College of Physicians and Surgeons really have to address in terms of disciplinary action that doctors receive from time to time.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do believe, though, that the Department of Health and Wellness should have a say in this. I mean, really, posting a sign in an office seems like a very mild warning for any woman that could be in jeopardy of being taken advantage. And a sign may not be effective for women with literacy challenges, vision problems, or language barriers. So, Mr. Speaker, does the minister believe there should be other ways, in addition to a sign, to warn female patients that a doctor cannot examine them without supervision? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And these cases, of course, become very public. They are well known throughout a community. But again, from periodically, I get to meet with the head of the college, and it's an issue that I can certainly raise in terms of cases generally, specific cases. The college have to go through due diligence and make their determination about what is appropriate discipline.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, I took the opportunity to ask the Minister of Community Services about the alarming increase in food bank use since his government took office. Yesterday, it was reported that the North Sydney Food Bank saw a jump in the number of people they were serving last month. That went from an average of 170 people using their services to 218. That is unacceptable, Mr. Speaker. I will table that. Families are struggling with the high and rising costs of groceries and cannot wait for the millions of dollars the department is spending on transformation to trickle down. Mr. Speaker, what is the minister going to do now to help the growing number of families struggling to meet basic needs?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as the member opposite would know, that food security is decades long. I went through food insecurity in the 1990s. It's a complex issue. I don't appreciate the triteness that she attributes to transformation because it's a decades long problem with that department not having any substantial changes to positively affect the cycle of poverty in this province.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Mr. Speaker, the prices of food, shelter and transportation have all increased since this time last year. In 2013, the Food Action Research Centre at Mount St. Vincent University calculated that a single man who was receiving social assistance would face a monthly deficit of $686 when trying to pay his bills and eat a nutritious diet, and I will table that. That's not the $20 this government is patting itself on the back about, Mr. Speaker. It's $686. So, Mr. Speaker, the minister seems to be satisfied in having more and more Nova Scotians relying on charities to meet their needs. These are needs that are the responsibility of the government. Does she not recognize that it's her role and her responsibility as the Minister of Community Services to these individuals?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I take my role as Minister of Community Services very seriously. That's why we're changing a system that has failed Nova Scotians who are in vulnerable parts for decades in this province. It's a very comprehensive system. There are changes that will be announced this week. Stay tuned. And there will be more changes in the future. But to suggest that this government or any member of this House thinks that the Department of Community Services doesn't care about vulnerable Nova Scotians is offensive.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Community Services and maybe a touch the Minister of Justice. I have a family in my constituency on social assistance, and they own a house, but they did not get the deed transferred. The house needs major repairs such as roof, new windows, insulation. The family does qualify for the Housing Nova Scotia programs, but need to have a deed for the property in order to get it. They cannot afford the cost of getting that deed legally. My question is, what can be done for a family in this position?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank you for the question. I'm not sure what the cost is, but I know that they can work with their caseworker. $2,500. Well, then we would work with the Department of Justice because I'm sure there are other people in Nova Scotia that are caught in that situation as well. But I would be more than happy to look into that for your constituent with my colleague from the Minister of Justice.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
And I appreciate that because I know my office has contacted Legal Aid, Dalhousie Legal Aid. I have contacted lawyers that I know just to get some advice from them, and they all say that it's just going to cost. And Legal Aid has said they just don't do that kind of litigation. So The person who could sign the house over is now dying and unable to sign. So we are in a quandary here, and like I say, the folks really need work done in the house. So I'm hoping that something can be arranged by the two ministries for this family.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think it just warrants my saying that I will work with the Minister of Community Services to see what can be done, and we'll look for the details of the case from you. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. On August 18th, the Minister announced the long-awaited hospice for the Annapolis Valley, and certainly that was a very welcome announcement. However, part of the announcement was that the hospice would open, was expected to be open in 2019. I will table that. However, at that event, Trish Cochran, VP of the Health Authority, said it was a goal of opening in 2019. Would the minister clarify that for the residents of the Valley? Will the hospice be open in 2019, or is it merely a goal that it be open in 2019 and may open at a later date?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that question. The long-awaited hospice is now going through its final design plans and putting a date on, as we know, always raises hopes and expectations. I believe that we'll see that will be at the very latest when the hospice will open.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that question. And the last time I checked, Mr. Speaker, it's 2016. We're talking about something for 2019. And this was in the works from 2013 on and before, well known. Can the Minister, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, can he explain why we are waiting for something that it was announced this year for till 2019?
The Honourable Minister of Health. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that was a date put out there, but I think we'll see work getting underway with the hospice. There's always a change now that it's under the health authority. Also, it comes under the direction of TIR. These were situations that in the past were a go with the local district health authorities before the nine became the one health authority. We now have a more rigorous oversight of those projects, and that's what's currently taking place. But I think the member opposite will see this project underway very shortly.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Recently, the Provincial Association of Women's Centres wrote to the Minister of Community Services to express their concerns about the transformation process currently happening within the Department of Community Services. One of their concerns is that in order for women and their children to have meaningful choices, income assistance benefits must meet their actual needs. In her response to this letter, the minister has said that the issue of income adequacy is part of the analysis being done within the department. So, Mr. Speaker, can the minister explain what standards or measures the department is using to define adequate income?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. And what she neglected to talk about was the first part of that letter where they said transformation was long overdue in the province of Nova Scotia. The complexities that go with poverty and food insecurity, and certainly the programs that were in the Department of Community Services, are intersectional and they're complex. It's not just about benefits. It's not just about one thing or another. There are many challenges that people on income assistance face. And so everything from income adequacy, to benefits, to education supports, to supports for persons with disabilities, to investments in child welfare are all part of that basket. And to simplify the cycle of poverty just does it an injustice and doesn't get anybody any further ahead in any province.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Mr. Speaker. In 2000, the government changed the ESIA rules to exclude post-secondary school students from receiving assistance and instead directed them to student financial assistance to cover their costs. This effectively shut out many high-need students from the possibility of attending university. I'm sure the minister would agree that students now should be afforded the same benefits as past generations of recipients. In her response to the Women's Center, the minister says that the transformed ESIA system will offer improved post-secondary and employment programs, which will be specifically focused on removing barriers. Mr. Speaker, will the minister agree to change the regulations to allow ESIA recipients to attend college or university while receiving benefits?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Actually, Regulation 67 does just that. It enables people to go to university. But I would invite the member to join us Thursday in the media room at 11 o'clock with my colleague, the Minister of Labour, as we make some very poignant, very focused investments in post-secondary education for persons facing poverty challenges in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, on Tuesday, the Premier quoted a very favourable comment from the BMO Provincial Monitor Fall 2016 report that said real GDP expected to grow at 1.1% up from 0.8% would be the best in Atlantic Canada. Because of his rose-coloured glasses, the Premier failed to mention is that the report had plenty of bad news in it. This is what it said about our labour markets. It continues to underperform, with employment down from year-ago levels through August and private sector employment down 6% from peak levels in 2012, with participation rate also falling even for prime-age workers. Now, I'll table the BMO report. The government is failing to create an
environment for
jobs to be created. Will the Premier admit that his policies are killing jobs in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, unemployment is down. I'm very proud of the fact through graduate opportunities, more young people are getting employed in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we're leading the country in per capita basis. We've provided more apprenticeship opportunities in this province. Mr. Speaker, today we heard that Conduct Technologies, led by Halifax Health Tech Entrepreneur, raised $9 million, Mr. Speaker, with Series A round investment just today, one day alone, $9 million. Later in the morning, we heard that there was a Halifax-based big data company, Mr. Speaker, led by a Dow grad that was acquired for over $20 million, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, those are all positive signs, Mr. Speaker. The good news is, unlike the opposition, most Nova Scotians are optimistic, Mr. Speaker, about the future of this province because they have a government that is working with to ensure that their children get an opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to build a life in this province, to find a good job in this province, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, let me say to you, not only isolated to urban Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, we've seen the investment in the wine industry, Mr. Speaker. The honourable member should know he joined me, Mr. Speaker, at an announcement, Mr. Speaker. We're always looking to build on the economy of Nova Scotia.
Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate him mentioning young people because the report
order,
raises...
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, to please call public bills for second reading.
We'll now call public bills for second reading.
Speaker, to please call Bill number 41, the Residential Tenancies Act.
We'll now call Bill number 41, the Residential Tenancies Act. The Honourable Minister of Business and Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that Bill number 41, an act to amend Chapter 401 of the Revised Statutes 1989, the Residential Tenancies Act, be read for a second time. Mr. Speaker, it's my pleasure to rise in the House today to speak to these amendments. We know that many Nova Scotians are renters and landlords. In fact, Mr. Speaker, over 300,000 Nova Scotians, about one-third of all households, rent their homes.